This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. When artist Jane Lillian Vance went to Nepal and met Sampa Nguyen, she entered an ancient world. Sampa's a traditional Tibetan doctor, a mind healer called an omchi. He's the repository of Tibetan medical knowledge passed down through many generations, many centuries. Jane decided that she wanted to make something called a lineage painting of Sampa. Lineage paintings honor the achievements of prominent people in Tibetan culture. There's a documentary that chronicles Jane's work and her trip to Nepal. A Gift for the Village will be screened next week in Smithfield at the Frank Creech Art Gallery. First, Jane Lillian Vance joins us by phone. Jane, welcome.
Thank you so much, Frank, for the nice introduction.
My pleasure. When did you first become familiar with Nepal and Sampa?
I have been traveling to South Asia since 1985. I first went to India to visit a roommate, an office mate in graduate school, and eventually I found my way north. I like to say I had an experience not unlike being blindfolded and feeling with my hand until I found a wall and a doorknob, and I opened it blindly to the Tibetans and to Nepal. I got there about 1990 the first time.
Were you an artist? Did you consider yourself an artist at the time, and was this part of your art education, do you think?
I was born in 1958, and I can tell you that, as preposterous as it sounds, by the time I was two, I was a serious artist, painting with the tar from my sandbox on the trunks of maple trees. So I had always been really a committed artist, and I knew it even as a child. But when I found this Tibetan iconography that is so patient and infinitesimal in its detail and so practical in its wisdom and its training, I was a goner, and I have been studying and learning about Tibetan art for really decades now.
I want to hear more about the art, but now I want to hear a little bit about Sampa Nguyen, too, and the art of the omchi. Maybe you can tell us about him and about the kind of medicine he practices.
Yeah, Sampa Nguyen is really, Frank, one of the last of his kind in this world. He comes from a time and a place when Tibetan healing was practiced freely in Tibet as it is not now. And his personal lineage goes back 10 recorded generations. And Omchi is a medical doctor who uses botanicals, natural, herbal, and mineral ingredients. But he is also what I can best translate as a mind healer. So he's a little like a combination between a minister and a physician.
How did you hear about him?
It was a National Geographic photographer, Thomas Kelly, to whom I had given some hints about travel, who saw pictures of my paintings and understood my inclination toward detail and really toward the Tibetan culture, I think, even before I knew it. And he said, "There's someone you must meet. And don't you ever forget, I'm introducing you to this man. We'll see what happens." And I met Sampa for the first time. He was formal, and that was a sign of respect. As a girl from Smithfield, North Carolina, I thought the formality was not promising. But as it turned out, I understood later that was a great sign of respect to me for him to have been formal. And we became colleagues and friends, and he likes to say, share the same mind.
You shared the same minds and the same space at one point. You did a kind of cultural exchange, and he visited your home for a while. How did that come about?
Well, we had crossed an 18,000-foot pass together in a blinding snowstorm, and when we finally got to the bottom of that adventure, where I really thought, this is where my children will learn that I died, but we made it to the bottom, he had this ceremony to say, "Jane, I have had dreams, and if they are true, then there's a chance in my next birth I'm going to be born in America. So I would like to ask you, can you show me the rivers and the mountains and the trees there? If you do, I will be more efficient in my service to the people. If if I know my way around a bit. So I invited him, and the great offices of Virginia Tech University, where I teach, brought him in as a visiting professor, and he lived in my home for 6 remarkable months.
What was he teaching?
He was teaching courses in Himalayan culture and also in Tibetan Buddhism, which is not exactly a religion. It's more like a technology of training your mind to be awake to whatever you care about.
We should talk maybe for a brief moment about the Tibetan community or communities in Nepal, communities in exile.
Yes, since 1950, when the People's Republic of China's army invaded Tibet, the Tibetan culture, only 6 million Tibetans have lived in exile. Now, some Tibetans are in Tibet, but they cannot practice their religion or culture freely. And though I know this is a point of some controversy, I feel compelled to be able to speak about it because I have traveled there for decades and I know these people. They do live freely outside of Tibet and have been called the most successful exiles in the world.
And in some ways, if these traditions are to be carried on, of course, they're carried on by the exilic community, the people in exile.
You're right, Frank. The Dalai Lama is about to have his 76th birthday, and he has said for many years as the exiled leader of his people that the hope Tibet has exists now outside of Tibet in the free people and in their coming to know this story.
So tell us about the visit then. Sampa now comes to the U.S. He's teaching at Virginia Tech. What did he make of it? How did that visit go?
It was astonishing because he really is a repository, like an encyclopedia, of so many of his culture's arts and traditions. I mean, he's a painter, he's a carver, he's a village chairman, he's a settler of disputes. He's really a remarkable, beneficent leader in his country, and he's known to be. At the same time, this is remarkable, when Sampa got to this country and I drove him around my home in Blacksburg and the New River Valley for the first time, he first saw a stoplight and he gestured and I said, "Sampa, red is please stop, yellow is careful, and green is you may go." And he, of course, understood, but he asked me, "Well, where is the man?" And I said, "What man, Sampa?" And he said, "The man choosing the colors." I said, "This is a computer, Sampa." And you saw his mind go out like the Matrix. And it took him less than a second, but he reconfigured this world. He's that good, but he's also that far outside what we know.
And all of that is what led you to want to create a lineage painting of him. So let me ask you to describe for us what a lineage painting is, what it does.
Thank you. The lineage painting form goes back thousands of years, and it's most comparable in our culture to a family tree. And we know family trees that list great-grandparents and branch out. Well, a lineage painting is like a visual family tree, but not of your relatives. It's of your teachers who gave you wisdom and compassion and the courage to have a clear mind. So this lineage painting has the central figure of Sampa Nawang, but it also tells the story of his history, his accomplishments, his teachers, and importantly, the story of his first trip to America, what he did here, and how he went home for his people.
Imagine living in a place that reveres teachers.
I took a school teacher. One of our videographers, the co-producer Jenna Swan, who's an award-winning and amazing videographer, and she went for the first time with me when I had been traveling to Asia many years. And people know me there. They know my work, and they greet me. But they hadn't known Jenna, and so when I introduced her, they would say, "And what do you do, Jenna?" And she would say, "Oh, I'm just a teacher." And everyone around her would stop with folded hands, put down their tea, and face her as if in prayer to say, "I greet the part of your heart that is like God. I greet your generosity." And Jenna looked over each shoulder. Who? it's a beautiful reverence for teachers there. Teachers are considered the highest form of human being.
And therefore, they are on these paintings, the lineage paintings, to honor the honoree, in a sense. Tell us more about the four. Are they, when I looked at the example, it appeared to be somewhat formulaic, highly detailed and beautiful, but it reminded me, not in the form, but in its the sense of formula, of Eastern Orthodox iconic paintings.
You know, that's funny. I had an old Russian icon, and you're exactly right. There's a symmetry to both of them. They have a central figure, and yet there is a story that wraps around at least my lineage painting so that you go clockwise around it the way the planets revolve around the sun. And it is formulaic, and yet there were differences for my painting because I was the first Westerner and the first female to join this tradition of lineage paintings. And I asked His Holiness the Dalai Lama, may I, you know, walk this path on the dangerous divide between tradition and innovation? And His Holiness endorsed the painting, the film, the festival to receive the painting. So it is formulaic, this painting, and yet there are differences. This is the first Tibetan painting, for instance, to have Appalachian wildflowers in it, not just the lotus and the chrysanthemum.
How did Sampa feel about it?
Well, it was quite a moment to carry the painting 13,000 miles and unroll it in Kathmandu and see that it had made the journey as well as my film team and I had. And then Sampa arrived and we unrolled it. That was a moment for the painting, the man in the painting, to meet the man himself. And he was very grateful. He knows that this painting will live, as he put it, 1,000 years beyond our lifetimes and help teach people about this cross-cultural bridge we have worked so delicately to make.
Now, what about the other Tibetan people who saw that? How did they feel about the painting? How did they feel about the transgressions inherent in this, you being a Westerner, you being a woman?
Transgressions. Mm-hmm. Yes, in a way they are transgressions. They are hybrids. When I joined this tradition, I had to have real humility, and I had to keep my wits so that I wasn't assuming too much about what I was doing. I had to be very humble and ask good questions up until the time the painting was unveiled in the festival. Fortunately, I have put decades in this project, and I did not really transgress in the awful ways. And the Nepalese and the Tibetans in exile who were there and the Indians who live in that Himalayan village were, I have to say, absolutely thrilled that someone from the other side of the world knows their story and troubled to learn their details and brought a gift all the way from the mountains of Virginia.
Did you have formal training? Did you have a teacher work with you, or were you working mostly by eye?
Well, both. I have studied art in university, but as an artist now, I know that you make light years of improvement and knowledge and skill simply by practicing your craft. You can't get surgically precise and have that kind of, you know, magical beauty pouring out without what we might call mistake, without painting 20 hours a day most of the time.
So you've worked on this. Does this work now, the work that you did on this lineage painting, inform the rest of your work?
If you were to walk into my living room, I hope you would take a long time before you wanted to talk to me much, because there are many king-size mattress paintings surrounding you there. And though many of them are informed by the elements of South Asia, Tibetan, Indian, Sri Lankan, Nepali traditions, I also tell stories because I am not living in those places as an American who lives in the Blue Ridge Mountains. So my paintings are and have always been a bridge between East and West. I don't want to, you know, I love Bob Marley, but I don't want to sit and riff Rastafarian music for the rest of my life. Somebody else did that. And Leonardo said in one of his diaries that the most beautiful architectural shape is the arch, if you think about it, because it's two weaknesses that lean together to make a strength. I love that idea. So my paintings are the bridge between East and West, I hope.
Now, I know there are some interesting technical details about just getting the painting to Nepal. Tell us about that.
Well, I think the most interesting detail may be that when we finally got the painting in a piece of PVC piping bored by drills so that it wouldn't pop in the underbelly of the big jet across the oceans, when we finally did get it to Nepal, we had to then have it attached to three layers of this museum-quality brocade silk, because there they don't frame with wood, they frame with silk, so that you can roll the thing like a scroll mm-hmm. and take it on horseback from village to village. So this is a mighty big scroll to stick in your backpack. It's now about 13 feet tall. And so we finally got this monstrosity rolled up with prayer flags wrapped around it. We got it to a smaller airport and to the final flight, which is a tiny little twin-engine dragonfly of a plane, the kind that you hear bad stories about. And we said to the people there, yes, thank you, we're ready. And they said, well, madam, this can't fly with us. Look at our plane. Look at your cargo. And I said, but sir, you know, a festival is awaiting us, and we don't have time to trek in the hundreds of miles. We would do, but we have no time, and we can't let the people down. Madam, we're sorry. And eventually, I pulled out the golden key, the letter from the Dalai Lama's office with the seal of the Dalai Lama, and I said, but His Holiness knows about this project and wants it to happen. No problem, madam. We will take apart the plane.
Whoa.
And they did. Don't ask me the details because I think my eyes were closed, but we got there.
They took apart the plane, then rebuilt it with this thing inside.
That's what I'm telling
which
you.
Which gets it there, but were you? Because that would be a little unsettling to me, I'm thinking.
You've got it right.
Yeah, because you take off and there's a bolt on the ground as you're taxiing down the runway and you're thinking.
When we land, someone said, very lucky flight. And I said, why was that? And he said, because we landed.
That's one where you would really, really applaud. And now, I know you teach at Virginia Tech, and you mentioned the fact that the Tibetan connection and talking about the politics of Tibet and China is controversial. And you have Chinese students in your class. How is this story received?
You know, if I did this teaching poorly, I would ostracize young people who are brilliant and gorgeous. That is not my place, and that is not my wish. I dedicate the part of my course that teaches about the Tibetan genocide, the ongoing situation in Tibet, I dedicate it to the great people of China, including my students who are looking at me in the small classrooms, and I say, this is not about Chinese people. This is not a vengeful part of my course. You know me now. You know what we do in the creative process. This is, in fact, about a time in China when the communist government became nasty and, murderous.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to learn this story. And my students are the most grateful. My Chinese students are among the most grateful. They say, we did not know. Mm. And they're grateful.
Jane, so good to talk with you. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Frank, you're excellent as always. I enjoy your show. It's been a pleasure.
Jane Lillian Vance is a painter from Blacksburg, Virginia. She and her work are featured in the documentary A Gift for the Village. Documentary is going to be screened June 14th at 5:30 p.m. in Smithfield, North Carolina, at the Frank Creech Art Gallery. To learn more about the documentary, go to agiftforthevillage.com. Just ahead on The State of Things, the music of Tom Maxwell. Stay tuned.